Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com. Recorded live from the lobby of the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. This is the Junctional Thinking Podcast, and I'm your host, Pierre Vigilance. My career path has taken me through a number of different sectors, from the clinical and the emergency department, through to nonprofit work in East Baltimore, and then on to working at health departments in both Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and then now into academia, to some extent still involved in academia, but also involved in some sort of strategic advisory work. But in all of that, I've come to the clear understanding that health and health outcomes, particularly for communities, cannot and should not be solely the responsibility of healthcare organizations. There are others that can and need to be involved in that work. And they need to be involved because there are things called the social determinants of health, which are things that sit upstream of health care that actually impact people's health and their outcomes. So housing, economic development, education, transportation, just to name a few of the things that impact people's health outcomes. And so junctional thinking is this place where we get to explore the intersection between health and a number of those different sectors, talking to leaders from different places who are doing work with organizations either that they lead or that they are working with to do things that impact health and health outcomes. And so there will be some folks who are on the show, as you know, who are specifically health leadership, and others who are coming from very different spaces. And today, I'm very happy to be joined by a friend and colleague, Dr. Mady Henson, who is the CEO and executive director of the Washington Regional Area Grantmakers Association, which is, I'll let her explain exactly what that is. It's basically an organization that houses the many of the District Maryland and Virginia's grant-making organizations doing work in a number of different sectors. We met, it's 10 years ago now, at Leadership Greater Washington, which, so shout out to the tenacious crew of LGW class of 2010. Celebrating 10 years next year, but the program started in 2009, so this is 10 years. So thank you very much for joining me for today's show.
Well, I am excited to be here. Thank you for asking me to be on your show today. And clearly, I love the topic of junctional thinking.
Yep.
Have had that opportunity across my long career in many ways to create the intersections, be at the junction of, and because I've worked actually in every sector.
You have.
It gives me a different lens to look at how these things can intersect and the importance of them. Just as you mentioned in the opening, you know, it is not in one space. There's not one group. There's not one sector that can actually resolve, eliminate, or cure, if you will, many of the ills that we're faced with in our communities. And so it is that junction. It is about us coming together, crossing those invincible barriers, or invisible often barriers, to say we want to do this and we've got to do it together. So I'm excited to be here. As you mentioned, I'm president and CEO of Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers. It is the leading philanthropic organization here in this region.
Right.
We have over 100 of the leading philanthropic organizations, and those are foundations, those are corporate grant making and corporate giving program leaders, those are in donor advice programs, those are individuals who philanthropically want to make sure that this region is the best that it can be. And so we look at ways in which we can have an impact across all of the areas in across the region. And so it's good to be here. Thank you.
Sorry, thank you for that. I'm sorry, there's a loud noise in the background. It just caught us off guard. Probably someone trying to applaud what you were saying. So if you don't mind me starting off sort of at the micro level, sort of on the one-on-one, because we were just having a conversation sitting in the lobby here, in which you were basically, and you had your education hat on, you did some coaching. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And it's great because there's no point in our careers that I think that we should be mentor and advisor free. Mm-hmm. So getting advice from people about what to do in a particular situation is always very valuable. And I think some of our listeners, being in earlier stages of their careers, listen to this show because they are looking for some advice to some extent. And some of them may be wondering, and I'm thinking about this because of the many different places you've worked, whether or not there was intentionality on your part to get that multi-sector experience, or was it somewhat serendipitous? So that's part one of the question. Then part two is, in a nutshell, how do you bring those things together so that you can be functional in the current space that you're in, or in whichever space you've gone to from one space to the next? So was it intentional? And then how have you used it?
Right. I would say that it wasn't initially intentional at all. But as I look back now over this journey, it was a part of who I am. Because I am a lover of learning, it allowed me to end up in many different spaces, pursuing the things that I cared about and was interested in. I started out my career many years ago, and I was a business person.
Right.
And I worked for major companies, led some major efforts within those major corporations and Fortune 500 companies. And I, you know, moved from that process to work actually for my own company. And I had my own company, so I was an entrepreneur for a number of years through that process as well. I always had, though, my foot, my hand in the nonprofit space, in the space of, you know, how do you help in community? It was a part of my DNA. It was who my parents were. We were always brought up to do more, to give more. And so that was always a part that was on the side of who I was. And at one point when I relocated, I am from the Midwest. I am from Missouri, from St. Louis. When I relocated to this region, I moved from nonprofit being that I did because I really just cared. And I actually moved into the nonprofit sector.
Okay.
And so that's a part of that, and had leadership roles, both global roles, national roles, local roles, and then direct service right where we are. Through the midst of all of that, I also was an education leader and an education administrator of a major school district. I also was an elected official, and I served on school boards. So some of who I am was all a part of the care that you had, but also the interests that I had in learning more.
Right. So it's funny, and I say this all the time, because we don't script this show. Mm-hmm. We don't sort of we sort of talk a little bit about what the junctional thinking, skills, behaviors, and ideals are, the SBIs. But I don't sort of drill them into people's heads like, we must talk about these things. Mm-hmm. So when you just by yourself say, well, it was about me being a perpetual learner and being somebody who was interested in that, that's one of the junctional thinking skills, just sort of solidifies for me that, yes, it really is something that's important. But the other bit of it was this self piece, the journey being something that is driven by sort of the seeds that are sown when we're young and the ideals that stay in us with respect to the service that we may want to provide as we go through our lives. So even if we work for a for-profit company, there's no reason why you cannot become involved in or keep yourself engaged in work that is service-oriented, which tends to end up falling to nonprofits to some extent, but is done in other spaces as well.
Absolutely. And you know, I'm just a firm believer that we all have the opportunity to make a difference.
Right.
You just have to choose what level of difference you want to make. So even at 24 years old, I in effect created my own nonprofit, if you will, space,
right?
Because it wasn't there. And it was about, you know, helping with the education and enrichment of middle school youth that I saw, you know, some real gaps. And
right.
And as a leader in that, I saw that I could walk back into that space and instead of just being the speaker in front of their classrooms, really pulled them into my world, and had them to be able to do their learning and training in corporate arenas, in colleges and universities, when those institutions weren't using their own space.
Right.
And so I think that, you know, all of us have that capacity to think about what is it that we could give, but what do you see the gaps that are sitting out there?
Right.
And those gaps, if you don't see anybody else filling those are places,
yes,
that give you the opportunity to walk into that and make a difference.
Fill it. Yes, yes, mm-hmm. yes. The voice you're hearing is that of Dr. Mady Henson, the president and CEO of the Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers. I'm sorry, I said that wrong before, WREG. And you are listening to Junctional Thinking, the podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. And I wanted to touch on that comment you just made about seeing a gap and looking to fill it and leading in so doing. Some of the learners that I've spoken to over the years, and even some mid-career professionals, are still sort of hesitant sometimes to actually push themselves out into or be accepting of leadership positions. Was that ever a challenge for you as you were coming up, or would you say that personality-wise you were able to do that? And then if I can go back to the second part of my first question, which is how have you used these sort of cross-disciplinary skills? So was leadership ever really a challenge for you, you'd say?
It wasn't a challenge for me, and some of it, I think, even going back to your early days, Pierre, I will say that, you know, I was always encouraged, even as a very young child, by my parents, you know, you can do anything.
Right.
You know, you just be the best at it. If you take on something, then you don't give up until it is. And so, you know, you don't think about it as much about leadership as much about doing and doing with excellence. So I think that becomes the question. I don't know that I want to be the leader of.
Good point.
But I certainly wanted to, if I saw there was an opportunity to make a difference, I would step into those spaces where I thought I could or wanted to know and learn how to make it be better. So I think from that you evolved as a leader. I mean, I think you start to see, you know, many leaders themselves didn't necessarily just jump up and say, let me be the leader. It's this evolution of what happened. It almost sometimes it's organic that others push you into that space because they see who you are and what you're doing and what you're
right.
saying. And you find yourself being the leader of when you didn't necessarily raise your hand up and say, that's what I'm signing up to be.
Yeah.
You know, some days you step back and say, how did I get over here? Okay. But I'm here. So let me just see what it is that I can get done in this space. And I think, you know, doing it really with that sense of excellence is what allows you to stay in those spaces.
Okay.
And then I think real true leaders are those that also, when you're at a space or a place and you don't think you have the capacity to get it done, you also know, you know, how do I step back from that space, because I don't want to be sitting there and not be able to authentically be able to do the work that has to be done. And that's good too. And sometimes that means you're the supporter of that person who you feel could actually do that work.
Right.
So leadership takes this weird space of, you know, servant leadership,
yes,
which is a place that I am, that sometimes you're serving, sometimes you're leaving. It all just kind of meshes together and it ends up being in a place that folks can feel good about joining.
And where leadership becomes an outcome rather than
yep.
an individual. So
absolutely.
As much as we talk about leadership, about being somebody,
yeah.
it's also about it being something,
yes.
something that happens.
Mm-hmm.
So how have you been able to then take these different experiences from these different sectors mm-hmm. and dovetail them mm-hmm. to be successful? Are there any particular lessons that you would say to people, here's how to think about how to connect these dots that may seem like they are nowhere close to each other, but in fact make you a very unique person capable in a particular way?
Yeah, and I think part of that connection for me actually stems from a core. So as an example, if I look back across this, many people will say, I don't even see how these things connect. Right. And they're very connected.
Yes.
As I now stand back and look. And it really is about almost everything I've done when I look back. It's about a caring piece, making a difference in the lives of those that may be less fortunate than we are, of how do you create and build up. So I've been building, whether it was young children to leaders in organizations, and giving them that fiber. So how do I help build the capacity of what you have to do there?
Right.
I am very drawn in looking at the realities of where we are. So as an example, you know, here in this region, because we live in one of the most affluent regions in the world, mm-hmm. and yet we have one of the highest rates of childhood poverty in this country, it's unthinkable to me.
Right.
And so when I think about even over the last 15 years and the work I've done, though I've crossed the sectors, it's all been about how can you have this dichotomy of what's going on here, and how do you move that forward? So from whether I was an education leader and looking at how do you in fact eliminate those academic gaps so that you can ensure you help move young people in positions that they are out of that space, whether I was working in direct service with an incredibly vulnerable population of young people who didn't have a lot of supports at all,
right.
how do you help lift them to a different place? How do I work from leaders across sector to help them understand the importance of us balance coming together to work together to move this? And so my work here, even at the Washington Region Association of Grantmakers, it's an incredible opportunity. I'm working with leading individuals and organizations who every day are thinking about, what do I invest in this region? What should I actually put my resources, whether they're time, talent, or treasures, to move something forward, and to be able to share, you know, what are the issues, where are the gaps, where are opportunities that we can actually help make a difference, and who, and more importantly, who can we come together with? So crossing those barriers, crossing those junctions. I'm talking about now in our work, we talk about uncharted waters, crossing waters and territories mm-hmm. that you haven't been in before, to talk to people and build new bridges is the way in which we can really move the needle. I'm excited about being in this region, because we have the potential to make this needle move. We have the wealth. We are well-resourced. We've got people. And we also have these issues. So how do you bring them together? I've been in many other places in the country working where, you know, there are big gaps. But quite frankly, the resources to fill those gaps simply wasn't there. And that's not where we are here. And so, you know, I look at it as an incredible opportunity. And every day I ask, you know, how and what I need to do to help influence those that can influence and make a difference in this space.
So I really like we're going to get around to talking specifically about, I don't want to call it a manifesto, but basically mm-hmm. what you're pushing the region's philanthropic organizations to do with respect to their mindset mm-hmm. around certain things. But last week, I had a great conversation with another friend of the show, Will Smith, not the Fresh Prince of Bel Air, okay. although, you know, it might be someday. Mm-hmm. I mean, plug, right? But Will Smith is a nurse practitioner down at Mary Center. We were talking about equity versus equality, and this whole thing about, well, what is it to create equity? And that means that in order to see over the fence, if you will, proverbially, then each person, people of different heights, need different size stools, if you will, just to see over that. And I think that that's a key element of what it is that we do to lift people up. Everyone doesn't need the same amount of lift, if you will, to see over a particular fence or see beyond a particular challenge. People need different things, and being able to apply the resources we have, that we have plenty of in this region, to the people who have a great need for it has been a long-term challenge. And I want us to sort of get to that. We're going to take a very short break. You're listening to the Junctional Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. on Full Service Radio. We're here with Mady Henson, President of Washington Regional Area Grantmakers. Sorry, Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Junctional Thinking, the podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. on Full Service Radio. I am joined today by friend and colleague, Dr. Mady Henson, who is the president and CEO of the Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers. And we've been talking about a few different things. We talked a little bit about Dr. Henson's background and, you know, how she's been a perpetual learner who hasn't been afraid of leadership positions, two key junctional thinking traits, and then how she's managing to try to weave her sort of servant leadership, sort of purpose-driven way of thinking about and doing things into the work that she's done in a number of different spaces, and now for the Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers, and what she's doing with respect to moving them forward. Philanthropy is an interesting space, Mady. It's sort of one of those places where one would expect that there would be a lot of understanding and embracing of different ways of thinking about and doing things. And I think to some extent there is, but it's also an institution to some extent, right? And as such, that institution has suffered from, I think it's fair to say, some maybe doesn't necessarily always move quite as nimbly as it might and should in certain areas and sectors. You're pushing right now very much on this equity, particularly related to race and ethnicity piece around how grant makers think about who they're serving. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and what it means to be doing that within this region?
Yes. So, you know, it is, again, it is an aspect of the region. Greater Washington, as I said, it's unique in who we are, not only from a resource perspective, but also from a capabilities perspective. Since 2016, RAG, and that is the acronym for Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers, has had a sustained focus really on the breadth and the depth and the impact of racial inequities here in this region,
right,
and have really challenged our own members to really face the facts that what is holding us back in many aspects is not the who we are, but the what we have been and how we've done some things. And a lot of that stems right back to disparities, inequities, and around race. And so we've challenged them to look at the history of the race relations and those inequities across this country from its origin all the way through, and how it has impacted their own thinking, their own beliefs, their own values, and more importantly, their decisions on how they can fund, invest in, and choose to change certain things in this region. And so, you know, in 2018, actually, the board of directors of RAG actually elevated that pursuit and stated that there was a commitment by our organization that we will actually drive this whole area of racial equity and make that the platform by which we do all the work that we do. And so you see that in convenings, in our learning, in our training. We've had trainings that have gone and been very deep to heighten the awareness and understanding, which started in 2016, 2017, and the first of which was called Putting Racism on the Table. It was the first time that someone actually wanted to call out the fact that much of what has happened, that is happening, is not only just about race and equity, it is about racism that was going on. And so people had to look not only through a lens, but in a mirror around that. We are moving forward from that process. We've done civil rights learning journeys and taking our members there and a host of things to actually build up. We see that as helping to shore up the foundation of getting to understand the whence it came from, because I can't move forward to correct something if I don't even understand from whence it came from.
Right, right, right.
So that's really a big part of what you see in our efforts, in our walk, in our work. And in helping those 100-plus members, philanthropic organizations, look at ways that they can deepen their work get closer to the real work that's out there and the individuals that are living those experiences that oftentimes are from the vestiges of our history.
Right. So the question I have for you is sort of a mixed one here, because I think that there are these espoused values that organizations can have and say, we are here to provide X, Y, and Z. We value certain things. And then there's what they actually do. And this has also come up in the past in conversations on this show. And when we talk about and look at, say, for example, and we've talked about this before, so there's a significant amount of money that the RAG members have under their control, say. And then there's a certain amount of money that actually gets out into community. And this is to some extent maybe I'm calling out the fact that there is, those two numbers are not equal, right?
Exactly.
And so there is some question about how are you putting the money out there? If you're saying that you're trying to change things, how are you putting the money out there? And that's not you as an individual in the organization of RAG itself, but the member organizations. So how do you, as the president and CEO, pushing this particular movement and shining this light and taking people through this journey, get that to then equal a changes in how resources are allocated to those communities? Mm-hmm. And how do you see that journey moving?
Right. And so as we mentioned and talked about earlier on, you know, it isn't one sector that cures anything. It is coming together and working together. And sometimes the frustration is when we're looking at only one space to be the savior of this process.
Right.
Through the philanthropic work that happens here as one of the legs that of this stool that's helping to create a foundation for those in this region or in this community that actually are pretty fragile in that process. And so whether we've got the government leg, we got the philanthropic leg that's in there, you've got a nonprofit leg that's in there, you got a community leg that's there,
right,
all coming together. And with those four legs, if they're all in place and they're all working it to the good, you're going to have some stability for those. When one is missing, you actually will still see some of the lopsidedness. So when I talk about what was contributed from our members and from those that we actually surveyed, and this is not all-inclusive, but we do an annual survey each year of our membership to really better understand what are you investing in, how much are you investing in that, how are you doing that, why did you do that? So, you know, some of the ahas that we found in that, and as I said, of our members that responded to that survey, over $255 million was actually invested in this region last year to help address some of those critical issues that are there. It was about a 23% increase for those members over 2017. And so that number, again, those investments have increased, which was good in a time when I will say overall for some of them, their assets actually decreased.
Okay.
And so what we look at is, you know, how do you, and it was the question, can we continue to encourage, support, and influence that investment in, even when you may be even seeing some changes in your own space?
Right.
And that for us is a real positive, because that
right.
really talks about a commitment to make a difference in that. And yes, those are huge numbers that are sitting out there, and yet what we know is that's not enough. So government coming into that, supporting it, private individuals, community itself, nonprofits in their capacity is a part of it. Much of where you see those dollars going into the region, it goes in through nonprofit organizations.
Yes.
It goes in through schools that are there. So they become really the arms and legs of how this work gets done.
Right.
What my members are looking at is, and those in the philanthropic space, is where can this work get done? Who can I I partner with to make this happen? And that's the same decisions that oftentimes government is also doing.
Right.
So what I look at is how can we actually bridge even some of that? How can there be even some more collective impact?
Right.
When we all know we're working on X, how do we actually start to look at ways of pulling that together? And there's much work to be done.
To be done in that space. No, I appreciate you sort of putting that reminder out there, which is that, you know, because people think of, we can go down the rabbit hole, and I may have positioned the conversation in a way that actually potentially did that. So I apologize if that's what I've done slightly by saying sort of, so there's all this money that's underneath your umbrella. What are you doing? And you make the very good and well-informed point that one sector alone is not and cannot be held responsible for things where we are all seeing, we are all engaged in different things. So there's a government piece to it. There's the nonprofits that you fund their piece. And there's the vision of philanthropy to some extent, but there's also the vision of for-profit organizations.
Absolutely.
And corporations, et cetera, and their corporate social responsibility and all of that. So this is good. You're listening to Junctional Thinking, the podcast on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. And my guest today, Dr. Mady Henson, and I are talking about a few different elements of the platform that she is sort of, or the direction that she is charting into uncharted waters with Washington Regional Association of Grantmakers, particularly on this race and equity piece. So you have an event coming up in a couple weeks, your annual meeting.
Yes.
And I obviously I'm aware of how you're doing some things that are a bit different there. But could you tell our audience a bit about what's coming and why you've chosen to do some of the things that you've chosen to do in that with that convening?
Yeah, so that convening is an annual convening of philanthropic leaders. It is an opportunity for them to come together to share, to get to know more about what's happening in the region, but also to learn and look at what impact they are having. It also is about direction. And so, as I said, racial equity has been a part of that direction that RAC has been actually guiding the members through for several years. We're moving it to another step with this, and that is, as I said, we've titled this event Uncharted Waters, but it really is thematically about what happens and will be happening over the next year, and that is getting the opportunity for our members to go even further into the deep, to step out a little bit further, to get to know others that you haven't, to look at new partnerships that can make a difference. So, you know, in that particular meeting for our members, we actually have a panel discussion. That panel discussion will have five African-American leaders, actually five male African-American leaders representing the different sectors and the work that they're doing, and appreciate the fact that you will be there representing
that. Thank you for inviting me.
Yes, the health sector in that process. But we have education with Superintendent Greg Hutchins. We have nonprofit with Glenn Ogilvie. We've got business with Thomas Penny. We also have philanthropy even nationally with Michael Smith from Obama Foundation, and talking about what does race equity mean for them, what has happened along their journey, but even most importantly, what are some strategic partnerships that could happen with philanthropy and the work that they're doing or those that they influence and are engaged with that we can move this further. We'll also be having nonprofit leaders that are going to be there, that are going to be talking about their own strategic vision, their opportunities and challenges, what's keeping them up at night, what are they excited about, how do they partner with philanthropy even further to actually move that needle further. We've got an incredible speaker that's coming in, and that is Edgar Villanueva, that some know. He's got a new book out, which is Decolonizing Wealth, and he basically looks in the face of philanthropy and challenges some of the colonial constructs, as he said, that have happened over the years in that. So it will be a day of conversation, engagement, but also calls to action to get people to think and do differently. And that, again, will also be leading up to, as I say, here in this region, unique in that we actually have also come together. There are seven regional organizations that actually started out thinking about how can we get the entire region thinking about race and equity, and how do we think about that as it relates to the future of Washington. And so more than a year ago, you had RAG and the Center for Nonprofit Advancement and Leadership Greater Washington and United Way of the National Capital Area, HAND, as well as the Council of Governments and the Community Foundation, all came together to say, we're all doing something in this area. We all have spheres of influence around this.
Right.
And so how can this work? How can we come together regionally? And there will be a huge summit, June 11, 2020, that we invite all who are interested in this to take a part in. And that will be looking at this issue of race equity and the future of this region. How do we keep moving this forward? Excited about it's going to be at the ARC in Southeast D.C. We're looking at 800 to 1,000 people coming together that day to talk about that.
Question I have for you about that, and thank you for giving the rundown for what's coming up in a couple of weeks on November the 12th for your annual meeting. Pointed question about the panel, because I don't know whether or not I'd like for you to explain to people what your rationale was, because you were very intentional about that panel, and what your rationale was for making this selection and having the panel be as homogenous as it is,
yes,
but different as a result of that homogeneity. And if you wouldn't mind, sort of like, because I think this is one of the founding, the cornerstones, if you will, of your commentary around race and equity.
Yes. So, it's almost back from your early question in the first half when you said, you know, was this by design from the beginning? I think initially it wasn't. It wasn't designed that it would just be a homogeneous group panel, meaning all males, all African Americans. It was really initially, I always knew we would have a panel to help, and it would be a cross-sector panel,
right,
to help my members really look at how do we get deeper and more in communication and in partnership with others that are working in other sectors, because we can all become very siloed in the work that we do.
Easily.
And so I heard from many of them. I spent the last summer actually meeting one-on-one with all of my members saying, talk to me about what it is you'd like to know. Mm-hmm. Who would you like to know? And many of them really are very interested in others that are working outside of the sector.
Right.
And so it was always known based on that we would have a cross-sector panel. And then in looking at and listening across the last 6 months, what I really realized is that there are voices that are missing, that people haven't heard or haven't on. Whether you're looking in the philanthropic sector, the nonprofit sector, if we talk about it from the space of who isn't there and who do you not hear from,
right,
you know, from a perspective around race, clearly you don't have many leaders of color that are there. If I look at it by race and gender, I have almost no males leaders of color that are leading that. Mm-hmm. And so it evolved into that I almost woke up one day and saying, how do I put into the presence of those that are really interested in it, those that have knowledge, understanding, they're vested in it, deeply vested in this work. They can pour themselves into it. They're connected in that. And how do I introduce them to my members so that they can actually grow through that? I'm excited about it. And sometimes you take for granted, because I've known all of those members of that panel for years.
Right.
And yet what
we don't all know each other.
They didn't know each other in that process.
A couple of us, yeah.
And so, you know, where I get energized by so many people, smart people that I interact with, and I have long relationships with many of them, because we do these cross-sector things that happen.
Right.
What I realized is, how do I make this a gift to my members?
Right.
And how do we hopefully from that find new ways of building bridges that are going to make a bigger difference even here in this region.
Right, right. So thank you for letting me ask you that and for answering that question, because I think that what you have just basically said is, and it's, I'm glad you took it back to the top, and I don't know if people are going to resonate with this or not, but if you've ever played any kind of game that involves hitting a ball, golf, tennis, baseball, anything, how your swing starts will dictates how your swing is going to end, right? And how your hands are positioned, how your elbows are, et cetera, et cetera. So you may not have, you had an intention to have a cross-sector panel, and during the course of your swing, you started recognizing that there were some other opportunities to bring it into a particular focus by having particular people do it. You didn't start your career thinking, oh, I'm going to end up with a multifaceted career intentionally, but you had service at the beginning and servant leadership at the beginning of your swing, if you will, and it has been the thing that has kept your elbows in, kept your hands in a particular position. So now whenever you strike the ball, you strike it straight and true.
Yes.
So it's an important sort of follow through, but it starts with a good foundation, and it starts with a foundation that is based on our passions and our desires to see things change. And I think that's what impact is really all about. So I appreciate you being in the position that you're in and the positions you've been in to be able to do this now in the way you're doing it. And I am thankful that you were able to make the time to come and join us on the show today to talk about sort of you and the work. And hopefully people who have been listening have been able to get a good sense of not only who you are, but how you come to think about your work the way that you do, given the multiple places that you've interacted in so far. So thank you, Mady, for being here today.
Thank you so much for having me, and look forward to at some point in the future joining you again.
Thank you very much for doing this, and looking forward to the 12th and to catching up with Glenn Ogilvie. Shout out to Glenn, another member of the class of 2010. I keep saying that because I don't know that these other LGW classes are doing anything the way that we're doing it. That's a bit of a jab, but we'll see how we get responses
that. That's right.
You've been listening to the Johnstone Thinking Podcast, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. on Full Service Radio. Thank you very much for joining us, and we will see you next time.